And with that being said, welcome to On the Board Sports. I am your host, William Cherucci, a.k.a. Will C., along with my main man, Sean Thomas, a.k.a. Sean T. Sean, how are you?
Well, I'm doing good. I'm doing good. Happy New Year, sir.
Awesome with a capital A, man. Happy New Year to you, too. And Happy New Year to Matt Peters. Matt, our wonderful, wonderful producer. He's awesome with a capital A.
Capital A.
You know, just... Hey, listen, those Bills. How about those Bills, huh?
Ending week 17 with a huge win, you know?
Absolutely. Josh
Allen. Quarterback of the...
Josh Allen looking like a real deal.
Yeah, man. He's going to be good.
Absolutely. But the reason why we played the New York Islander Gohorn, not only did they win last night by a final score of 3-2 in overtime against the Chicago Blackhawks at NYCB Live, home of the Nassau Veterans Memorial Coliseum, we have a very special guest on with us. Our main man, who wrote We Want Fish Sticks, Nicholas Hershon, who has also written books on Forest Hills. Just, dude, Nick, how are you today, bud? Thank you for coming on to the show.
Good. Yeah, thanks a lot for you guys having me. I'm glad to be here.
Nick, I got to ask you one thing, man. How did you become an Islanders fan?
As far as I can remember, really, I became a fan in 1999. I just used to drive by Nassau Coliseum a lot as a teenager on my way to going to visit my grandparents in North Merrick on Long Island. And even though I was living in Queens, I started to get excited about the potential of going to the Islanders games. There was no hockey team in Queens. You know, I became a Mets fan in the summer of 99. And then that fall, it just became logical. Well, the baseball season's over. You got to find something else to root for. The Islanders seem like the on-ice version of the Mets, maybe in some bad ways as well as some good ways.
That's funny.
But yeah, I just like that they were kind of like the underdog team in the New York market. They're blue and orange like the Mets, all that stuff. Yeah, I just kind of fell in love with them very quickly.
Absolutely. And the reason why, you know, I guess you wrote the book was because of the fact that, you know, you wanted to get more – into detail with how, you know, the Islanders were and all that. So tell us, how did you, you know, write We Want Fish Sticks? Because so far I've been reading it and it's been a really good book. It goes really in depth on the Islanders and their history from, you know, 1995 through 1997. And tell us how you, you know, wrote this book.
Yeah, well, I appreciate all those kind words. Thank you. And basically, I have a lot of gaps in my knowledge of Islanders history, honestly, because I became a fan so late in 99. So I didn't grow up with the dynasty teams. I have an appreciation for them. I've learned a lot about them over the years. I've seen the guys from those teams come back to the Coliseum. But certainly, there are lots of long stretches of Islanders history I knew nothing about, including this period in the mid-90s when they got the Fisherman logo. And I was in my PhD program at Ohio University around 2013, 2016. I had to pick some sort of a project that was going to be my doctoral dissertation. And I knew I wanted to do something about the Mets or the Islanders and how to be a part of their history that no one had ever looked at before. I didn't want to do something with the Islanders that would relate to the cup years because I wasn't there for them. This just seemed like the right kind of a project because a lot of the people who were involved in the Fisherman era are still around. So I could interview them for oral history. It was long ago enough that people have formed some opinions on it that seemed to be standing the test of time. We kind of know what the legacy of the logo is going to be like, but it wasn't so long ago that a lot of the sources are now unavailable. If you research something from, you know, hundreds of years ago where it's hard to find, for example. So it also just became clear to me it was a really colorful period with eccentric characters like Mike Milbury and John Spano and Kirk Muller and divisive figures, all of those guys. So there were just a lot of good stories in there to tell. And I was kind of surprised that no one had ever done that before.
Nick, so, you know, when you look at the team, you know, and obviously last season was one of the best, but they are off to a very good start so far this year. As Will said, a big win last night. Just give me your thoughts on, you know, your overview of the team this year and, you know, how far you think they could go.
Yeah, I don't want to get my hopes up too high because I know that it's still early and we don't know what it's going to look like at the end of the season. But right now, you just got to love everything you're seeing from them. I mean, I've been to three games so far. The December 1st, first game back at Nassau Coliseum. The December 15th, Billy Joel night versus the Red Wings, which is another great win. And then the game that they just had last night versus the Blackhawks, where they won overtime, as you guys are saying. So all of those, such excitement. They're getting so many amazing scoring opportunities, more than I ever recall. For years, I was in the Coliseum stands yelling, shoot the puck, when they would be on a power play and they just kept passing. And now just to see them doing that constantly and you know, getting great goaltending, it just, there's such a feel-good atmosphere around this team in a way. They have this chip on their shoulder because of what's happened to them historically, because John Tavares left as a free agent. So I think there's just a lot of things to really like about them. Under Lamoriello and Trotz, it finally feels like they have good footing. You know, and I was just looking at the program last night. It just felt so nice to flip through and see when they're listing, you know, Islanders GM and Islanders head coach, and to see names like that after years of, you know, seeing kind of nobodies, honestly, being, you know, the Islanders coach, or when it was Doug Wade. Okay, he's a somebody, but he obviously wasn't doing so hot for them. Yeah, it's just a great vibes in the Coliseum, and you know, it looks like they might have a chance to at least make some noise come the spring and make the playoffs. I think that if they make the playoffs, that would be a victory for the season, and it, just a lot of excitement in the years to come. You can see it on the horizon.
Nick, the one thing with this roster that I think a lot of Islanders fans can really agree with me on is the fact that right now the youth movement is absolutely amazing, to say the very least. I mean, obviously, Matthew Barzal is taking the league by storm. You have Anthony Beauvillier scoring goals left and right. You have Joshua Hosang now up with his flashy style of puck handling and his movement and grace out in the ice. And you also have Michael Dal Colle. A lot of people didn't think that Dal Colle would be even coming up now, you know, thinking that he would be a quote-unquote bust. But here he is, and he's, you know, he's playing meaningful minutes against, you know, some of the top NHL lines. You know, what do you think of this recent youth movement, and especially with, you know, no John Tavares, obviously. He went up to Toronto. We all know that. But give us your take on this youth movement.
You love it, right? I mean, it's the Islanders that I knew growing up were always building the next prospect of the future, and that's a big part of my book. You know, We Want Fish Sticks, where it's just they kept building Eric Fichaud, for example, as the goalie of the future, and Todd Bertuzzi as the, you know, the forward of the future, and all these kinds of guys. And then by the time they got any good, they would trade them away. You'd never really see them playing meaningful games. So to have this mixture of some veterans and, you know, some of the guys you didn't mention who we didn't even think were going to be really meaningful contributors to this team, but Filppula and, you know, just having Leo Komarov and guys like that contribute in ways that we didn't quite think they'd fit in. When they were signed, people were kind of snickering, oh, maybe Lou Lamoriello's kind of lost his way. Was he doing signing guys like this to big contracts? But they filled voids on the scene that we needed. And then to see the youth come up too, you know, all those guys you mentioned, to see Hosang finally getting to play and then doing well, and Dal Colle, you know, getting to see him on the ice, Taze, you know, scoring the goal the other day. So it's just, it gives you the impression that this team, even if they don't go far this year, and it'll be disappointing for us because it was so unexpected for them to do even as well as they have been. But even if they don't win the Stanley Cup this year, you kind of will head into the offseason thinking, I'm really looking forward to October of 2019. I really want to see what they're going to do in the next 3 or 4 years. And it's just all kind of weird to feel that way as an Islanders fan, because so many times at the end of the season, they would be like, nah, I don't really think they're going to do much next year. But now I think that there's some, you know, really good hope, some cause for optimism.
Nick, I'm looking at the book now, and I see you've gotten some feedback from some big-time hockey people, guys like Howie Rose and Keith Jones. In your mind, has the feedback been as expected from the book, or has it, like, completely been way better than you could have ever thought?
Well, you always hope for great feedback, but yeah, it's been kind of surprising to me, because so many people told me when I first started out on this project, you're never going to find a publisher, first of all, because hockey books don't sell that well, and especially hockey books that are not written by a famous athlete. You know, Wayne Gretzky could sell his book, but would I be able to? And then a book about the Islanders, where small market team, they in recent decades haven't had a lot of success. and people would kind of say, they don't have a very big fan base, so who's going to buy this book? And then to see it get coverage in the New York Post and on News 12 Long Island and all these different podcasts like yours, which have been great, and just Islanders fans reaching out on social media, that's been some of the most meaningful stuff to me, because that's really what I was doing this for. You know, I'm a fan too. I never covered the team. I was a reporter for the Daily News, but I wasn't a sports reporter. I was covering breaking news stories, community news in Queens, not hockey. So to come into this and be embraced by the fan base like that, and have all these people who cover the team regularly for, you know, Andrew Gross at Newsday and Reed Tucker at the Post and some of these other guys, it's just really nice after you do so much hard work to have people recognize it and have fans say, you know, I remember that play and I remember that game. And I've just gotten so many random emails from people. It's all been better than I could have expected. And I really appreciate the fans for doing that.
You know, you talk about the fans and, you know, you go to a place like Offside Tavern. Last week, I know that's how I met you, was through Offside Tavern. What was it like having your stand over there with all your books and having the meet and greet a lot of Islanders diehard fans over at Offside Tavern on this past Saturday when the Islanders beat the Maple Leafs 4-0?
I mean, that was just amazing on so many levels. It was my first time ever being at Offside Tavern, mm-hmm. which I think opened up while I was in Ohio, so I didn't really have a chance to go there. And I'm not in Manhattan that often, so you know, I just haven't gone the last few years. But to be there in general was kind of fun, especially since their logo has the fisherman in it, just like, you know, the subject of my book.
Right.
But then to go for such a big game when they're playing Tavares for the first time since he's gone to the Leafs. And yeah, obviously, well, you were there, you saw it. I mean, just that atmosphere of whenever the Islanders not even just scored a goal, but just had a heavy hit, or whenever there was anything to cheer about, those fans were going so wild. Since it's kind of a small place, the noise is just like at the Coliseum, right? It has that low roof and it really crowds in the noise, so it makes it so much better.
Right.
And then to have all these fans coming up to me and just talking to me about the book, you know, sharing memories, buying multiple copies. You know, I'm going to give one to my brother. I'm going to give one to my friend. He loves hockey. And a bunch of people who had already bought the book, and they just told me, you know, that they really like certain aspects of it. And, you know, we're just thanking me for doing it. It's, you know, you feel like you're at home. You feel like you're a part of this Islanders family that is maybe pretty small compared to some other fan bases in a way. But that just makes it all the more special, because we realize there's so few of us. We've been through so much together over the years, so many terrible themes and embarrassments, as I detail in the book. But then we can come together on a night like that. That was just, you know, made me feel like I definitely wrote the right book, and I'm so glad that it resonated. It just kind of was satisfying, I guess, more than anything else, to know that a project that a lot of people doubted when I started out on it is now getting this kind of media attention and fan attention.
And you know what, with the Islander fans in general, it is like a family. I've been going to Islander games for just about a couple of years. My first game at Barclays Center was for a date in 2017. And I'm saying to myself, you know, really, like, this is a nice place to, you know, the nice Barclays Center is a nice arena. But I went to the Coliseum back when, you know, it was still leaky and old and everything like that. But, you know, the Islander fans in general are just absolutely awesome, and they're like family, because every game that you go to, you get to see the same faces, whether or not it be the Blue and Orange Army, whether or not it be Pat Dowd, a.k.a. Sign Guy, you know, multiple fans. You know, it's just really awesome to see the camaraderie and everything like that. And, you know, the players love it. I mean, you get to see people banging the drum and everything like that, creating the home ice advantage that ultimately it brings. But I gotta ask you, man. You know, you go to the games. You've been to Nassau Coliseum. You've been to Barclays Center. It is really night and day, Nick, isn't it? Going to both places.
Oh yeah, and of course I'm biased because I wrote a book about Nassau Coliseum in 2010, and I grew up going to the games there, so I have an affinity for that place. I'm just a nostalgic person. I like history, so. The meaningfulness of being at Nassau Coliseum, where they had won the four straight Stanley Cups, where they had so many great memories and players, and the rafters look like the Sistine Chapel with Bossy and Nystrom and Gillies and all that. it's hard to imagine them going anywhere. And I try to take a liking to Barclays. You know, I went to a lot of games there. You know, for me, it's just the whole culture was different. There was something about going out to Nassau Coliseum, parking in that lot, seeing fans tailgate, you know, making the trek over to the building, that just felt, I don't know if pure is the right word, but it just felt like a bunch of like suburban people just like coming out to see their local team play. There isn't another major professional sports team on Long Island, so that was the entire focus. And then to go into some place like the Barclays Center, where clearly it wasn't built for hockey, it has the black and white scheme all over the place that's designed for the Nets. You know, so it's almost like you're visiting a place and you happen to be playing a home game there. Just like when the Islanders were playing the Rangers at Yankee Stadium and it was quote unquote an Islanders home game, but it's not really home. And it just didn't feel right. And, you know, so being at the Coliseum, that just is where this team belongs. Now, maybe someday we'll feel that way about Belmont if that arena deal goes through, but certainly the more games they play on Long Island, the better.
Nick, so in terms of this book, like, you know, like when people like they take on such a large, you know, thing that they want to do, they have like, you know, like their good points and their frustrating points. But, you know, for this book to have the success that it's had, when you were actually taking the time to write the book, what was your favorite point? Like when nobody was there, like what was your favorite part of like, you know, writing this book? And because, you know, when me and Will do the show, we have our like favorite parts of the show. Like, did you have like a favorite part of the book? Like, you know what? Like, you know what? Like, I really enjoyed this part.
Well, I kind of did it in stages, right? So a lot of it is kind of the reporting and researching at the start. And then I definitively moved away from that into the writing. Mm-hmm. And then there's all the trying to get it published, now doing the promotion, doing podcasts like yours. But to me, it was a lot of fun in that research stage, mm-hmm. where I wanted to reach all of these former Islanders players, coaches, broadcasters, and I created this long list of everybody, and I was trying to track down phone numbers and email addresses, anything I could do to get in touch with some of these guys who probably haven't been heard from in 20 years.
Right.
You know, in some cases, some of these, you know, little-known players on the Islanders from the mid-90s. And it was so fun for me. I mean, maybe it's in a nerdy kind of way. But it was so fun for me to just get an email back from some team or some former player saying like, yeah, I'll do this interview with you. And yeah, I'll give you this information. And it was always just so cool for me to get those emails back. And like, I remember the day when I got the email from Eric Fichaud, who ended up writing the foreword of the book, who was an Islanders goalie in that era. And just knowing that I was going to be able to talk to him first was pretty cool for me. And then later on, when I reached out to him about writing the foreword, and it was just really nice to get that message from him saying, like, sure, I'll do it. And, you know, I'd be honored to do it. And it's so great. You know, it reminds me of when I was a 14-year-old kid sitting in Nassau Coliseum thinking someday I'm going to be able to have conversations with these guys, you know, with a real-life Islanders player that was going to, you know, give me the time of day and tell me about their experiences. So that part was so much fun. Now transcribing those interviews over many hours, that was a little less fun.
Right.
And having to listen to my voice on the recording and having to get all the wording exactly right. But I just love that stage of a project when you are putting everything together and finding all these sources you didn't know you were going to be able to get, all these old Islanders programs, things I bought off eBay and things that fans sent me. That was probably my favorite part of the whole process.
Nick, who is your, speaking of the book, who is your favorite person to interview from We Want Fish Sticks?
I mean, there were so many people who were so cool to talk to. So it's kind of hard. I usually center on three guys, Tommy Soderstrom, who was a goalie on that team, Rich Pilon, and sometimes I'll say Mick Vokoda, because all of them just were so honest.
Mm-hmm.
And even though they didn't really know me at all before I had interviewed them, I felt they were giving me great stories, behind-the-scenes stuff, and they were very willing to criticize people if they thought, you know, I didn't ask any leading questions. I didn't say, so you hated Mike Milbury, right?
Right.
But when I would ask them about that kind of stuff, they, I thought, just gave me their genuine opinion. They could have been very diplomatic and politically correct. So I love that. A lot of them were just, these guys were very funny, and I've forgotten some of the you know, stories that are in the book. I don't remember everything because it's been a few years now since I put that together. But there were so many comical moments of what was going on, speaking to Rob DiFiore, who played Niles, the mascot, and him telling me about all the abuse he faced from the fans and all these wacky things that were happening to him, and, you know, kids kicking him in the groin while he's walking around, you know, not the Coliseum, and his mascot outfit at one point catching on fire because it had this motorcycle battery that charged the goal light atop his head.
Oh,
and one time when he's waiting to go out into the Coliseum concourse, it's catching on fire. Now, at the time, I'm sure it was very serious for him and it was not a laughing matter. But to hear about it years later and the way he was telling the story, you just kind of have to laugh at how this franchise was in such terrible shape, was such a joke. And I just was grateful to be able to relive that. I mean, to ask Travis Green about his on-ice kiss with Ziggy Palfy, which was a famous moment where they score a goal and then Palfy and Green end up behind the net. And for whatever reason, it's just like they were shouting into the middle of it. They kind of like kiss open mouth on the lips, and it became like this kind of funny moment. Just like to get people's opinions on stuff that you probably always heard about as an Islanders fan, or I read a lot about in my research, and then to actually speak to the people involved and say, what were you thinking in that moment? That was all like really cool for me.
So let me ask you something right now, Nick. You wrote We Want Fish Sticks, and you write the book about Forest Hills and Nassau Coliseum. But on a personal note, how'd you get into writing? Because a lot of people look and they see your book and they see other books, and how did you fall in love with writing?
I mean, it's probably like in middle school. It was just my parents always bought newspapers, and we always read Newsday every day and the New York Times on Sundays. And so that was my first foray into seeing the power of the written word and really how it informs us. We make decisions off of what we read. And so that's why I wanted to study journalism. And I did that in college and grad school. And I wanted to be a reporter. So I did that at the Daily News. And I just liked writing the first draft of history. There was something really nice about knowing I'm the one thing in between you not knowing anything about a subject or knowing everything about it. And kind of the power and the responsibility that is with that role. And I really cherish that. And then I just liked writing itself. I just like the challenge of putting together sentences in the right way, transitions, using vocabulary. I mean, it's, again, a lot of nerdy stuff, but there's something about that flow. And in these kinds of cases with, like, We Want Fish Sticks, to be able to tell a story and just think creatively about how am I going to do this? Which characters am I going to exclude or include? And which ones am I going to emphasize? How am I going to come back to this theme later on? Just being in charge, you have so much independence with a project like that. So you're really getting to decide how to put together the narrative. And I just enjoyed every aspect of that. And then when you finally produce it, of course, there's such a sense of accomplishment of, I'm holding, holy cow, I'm holding a book that I wrote in my hands. And now it's like it's on News 12. And now The Post and Newsday are writing about it. These newspapers I grew up reading. And now all these podcasters and all these guys I've been passing the Nassau Coliseum, like you two, are actually asking about it and telling me that they like it. Like, it's just surreal in a sense. It's kind of, I still go back to that passion I had when I first became a fan. So I love that through writing, obviously I don't have the skill to like lace up for the Islanders. And I'm never going to be able to be involved that way. But through the written word, I get a little bit of a piece of feeling like I'm part of the Islanders' history, or I'm contributing to chronicling it. And that's really cool for me.
Nick, as Will said, you have like other books. Can you tell us about those other books that you have, and where us as fans and everyone else can go to buy this book?
Yeah. And I appreciate that a lot. So my first book in 2010 was called Images of America, Nassau Veterans Memorial Coliseum. And my first foray into long form writing, it's mostly a photo history book. So lots of photos of political speeches by the likes of Gerald Ford and Richard Nixon at the Coliseum. Of course, there's a whole chapter about the Islanders going from their foundation as a franchise all the way up to, at that point, it was the Lighthouse at Long Island project that never went through. There's stuff about all these other teams that played there, the New York Arrows, soccer, New York Sets and Apples, and indoor tennis with Billie Jean King and Virginia Wade. And then, you know, the arena football, lacrosse, roller hockey, all that kind of stuff that happened in Nassau Coliseum. Mm-hmm. And then a few years after that, I did a book called Images of America, Forest Hills. It was in the same series by Arcadia Publishing. You've probably seen them in Barnes & Noble, or when you're walking around town, they have these kind of sepia-toned covers of, you know, some historic image, and they always have the same kind of little border at the top. But this one was about Forest Hills, which is the neighborhood where I grew up in Queens. And just going into the whole history of the area, famous people who lived there, from Helen Keller to Simon and Garfunkel going to Forest Hills High School and meeting up there, and just, you know, all these kinds of places that I knew growing up, from the movie theaters to the apartment complexes to Forest Hills for a long time hosted the U.S. Open tennis tournament before it moved over to Flushing Meadows. Mm-hmm. And so those are my first two, you know, kind of getting a sense of how to do a little bit longer form writing. They're both available on Amazon still if anyone wants to get them. And, you know, a lot of Barnes & Noble and local booksellers have them. And then, of course, We Want Fish Sticks on Amazon. And I'm hearing that's at a lot of different Barnes & Nobles. And I have all these other events coming up. You know, January 7th, for example, this upcoming Monday, I'm going to be at Book Review in Huntington at 7 p.m. talking about the book, signing copies. I've got on January 10th, I'm going to be at Jerry Cosby, the hockey memorabilia store near Madison Square Garden before the Islanders play the Rangers that day. So I'll be there from about 4 to 6, signing copies of the book. And on January 26th, I'll be at the East Hampton Library on Long Island at 1 o'clock. So, yeah, lots of opportunities to pick this up. And, yeah, I really appreciate the chance you give me to talk about that.
Definitely, Nick. Nick, I do have a personal fan question for you. You know, when, as sports fans, you know, we kind of all remember where we were when, you know, this team won a championship or this goal was, you know, made or this shot was made. Obviously, JT in 91, near and dear to all of our Islander fans' hearts. I know, and Will knows where we were when we learned the news that, you know, he was leaving to, quote unquote, go home. And you saw the pictures of him in Maple Leafs gear and Maple Leaf sheets, you know. You know, like, how do you feel about him leaving to, quote unquote, go home? Because I feel like a lot of fans took it as a he betrayed us and he's this and that. And even though I'm a fan of the team, I took it in a way like, you know what? If he's going to go any place, he chose to go home. And I could live with that, where a lot of other fans still hate him for the fact that he left regardless of where he went. So what's your whole so I know it's been, you know, a few, you know, weeks here, but, you know, what's your take on him leaving us to go home?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough for me because I was at Nassau Coliseum when he was drafted. And I remember that amazing reaction at the draft party when they announced it was going to be him and the confetti coming down and everything. And I saw his first NHL goal at the Coliseum. I've been at, you know, many different, you know, events where he, you know, scored hat tricks and all these great memories. I was actually at the All-Star game in Columbus in 2015 when he scored all those goals and should have been the MVP. So seeing him leave, you know, the way I come down on it is the decision to leave. Of course, you understand sports is a business. And if I were in his situation, I'd probably want to go home too. I understand that. I think it's all on about the way that it's done. And I think what really irks Islanders fans, because we've been burned before where people have left, but it didn't feel this way.
Right.
And I think it's that we had given so much to this one player. He was our captain. And over the last few years, he had said so many times that he really wanted to stay on Long Island. His goal was to be with the Islanders. And when people would bring up Toronto, he completely dismissed it as sort of like, well, you know, I really just want to focus on being here. And to have him leave and take so much time to make that decision so that it kind of tied the hands of management. Maybe they, if they knew that Tavares was going to leave, either, you know, if you believe some of the reports, Garcinoe asked him last season, you know, I'll trade you. If you're just going to sign up another team, just let me know because maybe we can get some prospects back here. And, you know, then I think that would have lessened that blow.
Right.
But he didn't do that. Apparently, again, if you trust those reports, he told Snow, no, I want to be here. So they let things be. And then he went right down to the wire on July 1st, right? So it's not giving a lot of time for management to come up with plan B of what other players, as all these other great players are coming off the market or being signed or are deep into negotiations with other teams, the Islanders are kind of stuck thinking, well, we're all in on Tavares. We can't really sign anybody else because we don't know what our salary cap structure is going to be like.
Right.
So I think that's where it really stings and makes it like, you know, if you were going to leave, you could just have told us in a different way. And, you know, and then, of course, posting that photograph of him in the Toronto bedsheets is just, you know, I think it goes to what a lot of fans have said is I think he's kind of tone deaf. I don't think he's necessarily a bad person, but I think he just kind of like didn't understand the way that some of this was going to come across. And that it just came across so much as like a villain almost, or just somebody who really didn't care that much about the way these fans felt, or all the what now come across to some of us as lies that he, you know, said to the media. It's tough. And so, yeah, I feel it from the fan base that you got to think that he's probably one of the now all of a sudden one of the biggest public enemies in Islanders history. And it's going to be weird because he's also one of their best players of all time. So, you know, part of me wonders as like a historian, 20, 30 years from now, are they going to like invite John Tavares back? Will they be maybe not raising a banner for him, but are they going to be inducting him to the Islanders Hall of Fame? Is there going to be some sort of a you know, reunion at some point and fans cheering for him? Because it does just suck when you lose a guy like that and then you feel like, yeah, you can't even talk about him anymore and fans have to cover the Tavares nameplates on their jerseys with duct tape and write over Goring or Snake or whatever else.
Individual.
Yeah, exactly. Individual. Or like Will had over at the Offside Tavern.
Yeah.
So when I, you know, and I have that thing myself, I have a Tavares jersey and it's like, you know, it's embarrassing. You can't wear it to a game now because it's like you're trolling your own fans if
right,
you do
yeah.
it. But, you know, do you really, what are you going to do? You know? So it's rough, but yeah, no, I'm with, I think, Will's opinion as I saw play out at Offside Tavern, all those fans there, you know, I think that he could have handled it a lot better.
He absolutely could have handled it a lot better, but hey, 12 million reasons why he wound up leaving, you know, saving taxes and all that stuff by living in Canada instead of paying a lot of taxes here in New York, in Nassau County, one of the highest taxed counties in all of the United States, so... You know, I kind of get that too, to a degree, but, you know, to leave the fans high and dry like that just doesn't resonate well with the whole Islander fan base. But that was back in July 1st and back on, what was it, December 28th, up in Toronto, Islanders 4, Maple Leafs 0. So, yeah, we won the battle, but the war is certainly not over yet. Can't wait for February 28th. Nick, always a pleasure talking to you, my man. Thank you for coming on to the show and discussing not only your book, but about the Islanders and life in general, man. So thank you very much for coming on.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I love talking about the Islanders. Obviously, I love talking about the Fisherman era. I spent so many hours of my life I'll never get back looking into the statistics of the mid-90s Islanders. So it's kind of fun to you know, have a chance to talk to real fans about it. So thanks a lot for that opportunity.
Anytime,
I appreciate
Nick.
You, Nick.
Anytime, Nick. Thank you for coming on.
Take care, guys.
You too. Thank you. That was Nick Hirshon, author of the We Want Fish Sticks book and also author of Nassau Veterans Memorial Coliseum history book and the Forest Hills history book. So,
you know, when, Will, you know, something that I was